Welcome into The Jump. I'm George Sedano, in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. Today, I'm joined by NBA champion Kendrick Perkins and our senior writer and host of the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe. Coming up, the Sixers extended the contract of general manager Elton Brand. Was that the best move for the organization going forward? We'll get into that shortly, but first, for the fourth time, the NBA and NBA Players Association agreed to extend the deadline to serve notice on terminating the collective bargaining agreement. The extension now goes to this Friday, November 6th. This allows additional time for talks on modifications to the current CBA. Our agent Wojnarowski reports that waiting until January to begin the season could lead to losses between $500 million and $1 billion. So, Perk, do you think the league and the Players Association can come to an agreement by this Friday?
George, they better come to an agreement. That's a lot of money. Look, we know the NBA don't want to lose money. We know a lot of guys that's playing, players, don't want to lose money. You have a lot of guys that are not making the $40 million or the $20 million contracts a year that are at the lower tier that need their salary. They need that money to feed their family. So I'm all the way convinced that they're going to reach an agreement come Friday. They have to.
If I'm the players union, I'm sitting there right now saying, wait a second, 500 million, a billion, we're talking about a 3-week difference. Exactly how'd you get those numbers? And once you get them and put them in front of the players, I do agree with Perk, money always wins, or money almost always wins. And the majority of players are going to look at those financial losses and the ramifications and say, okay, we can stomach getting back to work a little earlier than expected. And remember, most of the teams have been off for a long time now. So I do think this will get done, but I'll tell you what, time is growing short. Like December 22nd is basically tomorrow. We got to get moving or else that date becomes unrealistic.
Zach, let me ask you a question. Obviously, this is an ongoing negotiation, but do the players get something in return potentially, do you think, outside of just the finances, right, in regards to starting on December 22nd?
I'm honestly not sure about that. I think the most likely thing they're probably discussing right now is how much of their salaries get pulled back by the league. Can we spread that over multiple years instead of having everyone take the pain this season? So maybe there's a concession to be made there, but I don't necessarily think we're going to get into broader CBA negotiations and all that stuff. But maybe, who knows, if they should ask for something, frankly.
Perk, what is the significance of making sure they start by Christmas in your estimation?
Well, I mean, you know, it comes down to the players union and all the players agreeing. And guys like LeBron James, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, the max guys, taking in consideration that everyone is not making, hundreds of millions of dollars on shoe money. That a lot of guys need this cash to survive in the lower tier. And they have to hear those guys' voices and make sure they take them in consideration. So as a whole, Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts has done a great job at the players union at being at the top, and their leadership is going to have to come in effect even more right now when you talk about people's livelihoods.
What does your gut say, Perk, Zach, about the way this thing plays out?
I think they get a deal done. I think we're going to see Christmas Day games. We have to. It's a must. I don't want to be sitting around here watching my kids open up Christmas presents. I need basketball.
I agree with Perk. I mean, my gut's getting a little queasy, but my gut still says we're going to have basketball December 22nd, December 25th. If that's what the league wants and that's what its broadcast partners, including us, want, I think money is going to win. Money usually wins. So I think we'll get it. But, you know, it's like time's getting short, but I still think we'll get there.
Look, I don't think they can afford to do what Major League Baseball did, which was, you know, pre-pandemic or during the pandemic when they were trying to negotiate a season. It certainly put fans at odds. It turned a lot of fans off. I don't think the NBA or anyone really can afford to do that at this particular point. Let's move on. The 76ers officially named Daryl Morey president of basketball operations and extended the contract of general manager Elton Brand today. Brand took over as the GM back in 2018 and has made some big moves since. Zach, smart move to extend Brand at this point?
I do think so. I will say it's been fashionable among Sixers fans to sort of absolve Elton for some of the moves that didn't work out. I don't know how powerful his voice was in some of those moves, but I don't think it's fair to just absolve him and say it wasn't him. That said, I think Elton is really sharp. And my favorite thing about Elton as a decision maker is, A, he's egoless and collaborative. He doesn't need to get credit for everything. It doesn't need to be his idea. He doesn't operate like that, and that's healthy. And number two, he's not going to approach this job like he's just trying to preserve his job. He made a lot of money as a player. He doesn't need this job. He's going to be a risk taker. He's going to be open to out-of-the-box big ideas. And I think when you get that kind of combination of thinking and that kind of combination of factors in a young rising executive who played in the league, who's connected throughout the league, I think you absolutely keep that guy around. Elton, if he wants it, I think has a great future in the league.
I agree with everything you're saying, Zach. You're actually speaking the gospel today on this Monday afternoon, because Elton Brand is beloved by everyone in the NBA. He has great relationships with current players, former players, general managers, and he's a player's GM. And also, he's an aggressive GM. And you put him and Daryl Morey together, they go do wonders for the 76ers along with Doc Rivers. So I love that they extended Elton Brand, well-deserved. And I think him and Daryl Morey are going to work extremely well together.
So look, the Sixers now have their front office and new head coach secured for the next couple of years. So now it's time to look at their roster. And here's what Morey's outlook on Joel Embiid was today. Let's take a listen.
When Joel is on the floor and healthy, and he's been in here twice a day for quite a while. He's very focused and motivated. This is an unbelievable defensive team. And the fact that he's also an extremely good offensive player, that's how you – Joel is the kind of player you win championships with if you look back through NBA history.
So, Perk, you heard Morey clearly state he believes he can win with Embiid. Mm. So what do you think this Philly team needs to do with their current personnel?
Well, I strongly believe they have to be aggressive during the draft and during this offseason. I think they will be aggressive. I see them moving a guy like Al Horford and getting off his contract and bringing in some type of shooting to build around Joel Embiid. Look, Joel Embiid in shape under Doc Rivers is my MVP candidate along with Anthony Davis. I think he's going to play at the highest potential we ever saw him, ever witnessed him play. But I strongly believe that they got to get rid of Al Horford contract. They're going to keep Tobias Harris. I believe Tobias Harris will fit well with Doc. You remember when he was with the Clippers, he played well, all-star level under Doc Rivers. So I expect them to be aggressive.
Daryl Morey is nothing if not aggressive, and I think he's already dispelled some of the misnomers about him. He only wants to shoot a million threes. He only wants to play this way or that way, and it doesn't fit Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Not true. What Daryl Morey really wants is stars. And in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, he has stars. Now, whether they are two super-duper stars, two top five players, top 10 players, top 15 players, whatever, that's TBD. But I don't think his first step is going to be, let's break up that partnership just because it hasn't fit optimally. I think Perk's exactly right. I think he's going to look at some of the supporting pieces like Al Horford and Tobias Harris and even Josh Richardson and say, is there any way we can get off some of these contracts, use some of the picks we have? They have five picks in the draft that's coming up this month, to sort of flip some of those guys for guys who fit better around Ben and Joel, and then take a year to see how it works.
Zach, I was listening to the Low Post podcast with you and Bill Simmons, you know, a week or so ago, and talking about all sorts of different trade scenarios, including this particular team. But if you look at their roster, you know, and we've all talked about this before, you know, two or three seasons ago now, they had a lot of shooters around them. They had Bellinelli, they had Ilyasova, they had J.J. Redick. And as that shooting has gone away, the net rating has decreased between the two stars and the type of impact that they can have together. How do they try to cobble together these pieces that you said they're willing to part with and create that roster around them that will allow those two to flourish? Do you make moves knowing that you may have to give up something else in addition to get off some of those contracts to get what you would want in regards to spacing and things of that nature?
Absolutely. I think you're going to have to take some pain in getting off some of those contracts. That said, I think Al Horford has more value around the league than people might think. There are some teams who look at him as a really good veteran, a guy who was a little bit out of place last year in Philly and is better than how he looked and can stabilize our defense, stabilize us as a full-time center. And I think you look at trades where you send out Horford and you attach a pick, you attach something else. That's why maybe Josh Richardson has to be involved. I think he's still a really valuable player and has some interest around the league. Who knows what's going to happen? But Philly, yeah, they're not going to get a trade that's just a home run for them. That's not how it works. They're going to have to send some good stuff out to get some good stuff back in.
All I know is they need to keep Joel and Ben Simmons. Look, These are two studs. I hear a lot of rumors about maybe trading Ben Simmons. You're not going to get back what you have in this young stud. You need to keep it. Doc Rivers will find a way to make it work. Like Zach just said, Al Horford is the key. Al Horford with a pick, he has a lot of value. Teams are still high on Big Al. He still could play the game. He still is a stretch five that teams would love to have. So I would look at him, if I'm the Philadelphia 76ers, that they might be trying to move him, especially this offseason.
Yeah, well, the process continues. Maybe a different process, but this process at least will attempt to try to win a championship sooner rather than later, I would imagine. It's time to play America's favorite game, BS or Real Talk. We give you quotes, and you judge how accurate you think they are. First up, David Falk, the super agent who was Michael Jordan's agent during his playing days. Over the weekend, Falk went on SiriusXM's NBA radio and said that the talent in this era isn't equal to MJ's time, and predicted a stat line if Michael played today. Take a listen.
I think if Michael played the game today, the way the defense is played or not played, I've said this publicly, I think he'd average 60. You know, I think he'd shoot 75% from the floor.
All right, Perk. Is David Falk, okay, is he really saying that MJ would average 60 points on 75% shooting in today's game? Do you feel that's BS or real talk?
Look, that's BS. And you know the bad part about it was that he was dead serious. David Falk might be sitting back sipping too much of that moonshine, because to say that Michael Jordan would average 60 points on 75% shooting, that is absurd. I wouldn't even do that when I be going to the LA Fitness. I'd be going getting buckets. But to say to disrespect this generation like that is just disturbing to me. And he's out of line. Like, Jordan wouldn't average 60 points on 70% shooting, 75% shooting. That's just crazy.
You know what never gets brought up in this old time versus modern time debate is, yeah, it's less physical and you can't hand check and there's no Detroit Pistons body slamming people to the floor now. But the defense is so much more complicated. You can play zone. You can overload one side of the floor. And isolation is so much of a more complex as an attack mode than it was when Michael played. So it's not, people just focus on the physicality. Of course this is BS. Of course he wouldn't average 60 points on 75% shooting. He might not even be able to average that in NBA Jam. I just don't understand, where are these numbers coming from? What's next, 80 points on 90% shooting? Like, what's the next thing?
Yeah, it's just utterly ridiculous. It kind of reminds me, shout out to our friends at NFL Countdown when they do, come on, man. This feels like that. Like, this feels like a come on, man. All right, next we move on. Former president and GM of the Sixers, Sam Hinkie, did a rare interview with our pal Pablo Torre on the ESPN Daily podcast. Make sure you subscribe to that. Pablo asked Hinkie if he'd be interested in returning to the league at some point in any capacity. Hinkie denied it outright. Here's what he said. Hinkie, the creator of the process in Philly, said on his interest in returning to the league, quote, zero. I've turned that chapter for sure. That part of my life is gone. I very much like what I'm doing now. And for reference, he is a man who runs a venture capitalist firm at this point. But Zach, is Hinkie saying that he has zero interest in returning to the NBA? BS or real talk?
I think it's real talk. I've never gotten the sense from Sam that he really has any interest in going back to the NBA. He's super happy on the West Coast doing what he's doing. I think it would take an owner coming to him and saying, you have carte blanche. I'm never even going to pick up the phone and tell you what to do. I'm going to give you unlimited resources to do it your way and unlimited time to do it. And that's just not a realistic scenario. So I think it's real talk. Farewell, Sam Hinkie.
Zach, please. I can't believe you falling for that. That's BS. That's BS. If someone came and offered him the bag, he would take the job. Come on now. We always know. You just said it earlier in the show. Money talk. Money moves the needle. So if someone came and offered him a nice job, we just watched it with Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey walked away from the Rockets and said, you know what, I'm going to take this time with my family and I'm going to, you know, just be in my kids' life. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, we hearing about, or not even 2 weeks later, a week later, we hearing about him taking the Philly job. Come on, Zach, don't be fooled by that.
So, Perk,
people don't go into venture capital to not make money. I think he's probably making money.
Yeah, I would say he's probably making money, but I would lean towards, I'm going to go with Zach here, mostly because of how toxic it was at the end there. I mean, the league literally extrapolated him from that situation. Like, I just think that the owners around the league, to Zach's point, like, I don't see anyone giving him carte blanche and whatnot. And he does live a nice life, is what I'm guessing, if he's running a venture capitalist firm. So let's move on. Danny Green and the Lakers are NBA champs, and now he's taking shots across town at, of course, the little brother Clippers. As a guest on the Ringers NBA show with Rajah Bell and Logan Murdoch, Green suggested what happened to the Clippers was a work of karma.
I think the basketball gods will humble you if you don't, you know, play the game the right way or do the right thing. I think you shouldn't speak. I mean, a lot of people say speak things into existence, which is cool. I like that, but I'm not, you shouldn't be as cocky, because a lot of times you're talking that it's going to go the opposite way. You know, some way, somehow, you know, things ironically are going to turn out the way you talk, opposite of you talk.
So, Perk, is Danny Green saying the Clippers were humbled by the basketball gods for not playing the right way? BS or real talk?
That's real talk. And they were. Look, the Clippers were the most arrogant team in the NBA. And they only had one champion for as a player, and that was Kawhi Leonard. Everyone else was cocky, talking noise like they won championships. And they did get humble. You have to respect the game. You have to respect the game of basketball in your opponent, or the basketball guards like Danny Green, a three-time champion, just said, will humble you, and that's what happened to the Clippers.
I think it's real talk only because I love any invocation of the basketball gods. I believe in the basketball gods. I believe they're listening and watching, and they are ready to punish or reward you based on your behavior. As to Perk's point, look, I do think the Clippers' adversity level in the bubble has sort of been understated in the rush to pile on them. You know, they had three key players leave for family tragedies and come back, and none of them were right, and that was obvious. That said, they played the Denver series like they just expected Denver to roll over. We're up 15 in the third quarter on the verge of elimination. You're going to roll over. We'll cruise. We're ready for the Lakers. And when Denver punched back, they just flat out fell to the mat and never got up. And that's the thing about the NBA. Perk will tell you, no matter how good your team is, no matter how much you've been yapping all year and blowing people out, you are going to hit adversity in the playoffs. It is how you respond to that adversity that defines you as a team, and they flat out failed, and so maybe the basketball gods did punish them.
Ultimately, I agree with you guys. There were some other things. Obviously, injuries played a factor in all this stuff, and I don't think they really understood what kind of injuries that they may have been dealing with, and they were snake-bitten in certain ways. But they did cheat the process, it felt like, in a lot of ways. There were opportunities for them to get on the same page from a chemistry perspective, and for one reason or another, it didn't work out. And that's on them, ultimately. It's on the players. It's on the coaching staff. It's on the organization as a whole. All right, coming up, our Brian Windhorst is reporting that James Wiseman does not, I repeat, does not want to play for the Minnesota Timberwolves. How does this impact the Wolves and the rest of the draft? That's next here on The Jump. Stick around. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for Rachel Nichols, along with Kendrick Perkins and Zach Lowe. The NBA continues their negotiation with the NBA Players Association about how to execute a season that may be played with minimal fans allowed in their respective arenas. As Brian Windhorst explains, making the revenue and the math work undoubtedly will lead to sacrifice.
For the NBA to play next season, the players and owners have to come to an agreement about money. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, the NBA was expecting to take in around $9 billion this upcoming season. About 50% of that revenue would come from television and other media deals, and around 10% from other sources. The remaining 40% was to come from arenas. But that 40%, more than $3.5 billion, is in jeopardy. No one knows how many fans will be able to come to the games. And that is causing a problem. NBA players and owners have a deal. They both get about 50% of the basketball-related revenue pie every year. This half of the pie determines what the salary cap is. NBA teams base future player contracts on the expectation that the salary cap will continue to grow year after year. That's how they can give out four-year deals, like the Lakers did with LeBron James back in 2018 and have been planning to do with Anthony Davis this year.
This is why we work!
But with all the uncertainty about arena revenue, the pie the teams had been banking on for the last several years when signing players all of a sudden could be much, much smaller. If the full pie or close to it isn't there, the whole financial system breaks down. So what can be done? The idea that the players and owners have is to pretend the revenue pie is there for this year, and maybe next year too. This way the salary cap won't collapse, and all of those pies over the next few years won't implode. To make it work, every player will have to give back some of his salary to make sure that 50-50 split with the owners still happens. From the highest paid veterans down to the guys who are on their rookie deals. But how much smaller? Maybe 30%, maybe 35, maybe more. With the owners now talking about shortening the season, players could be looking at fewer game checks too, but there is little choice.
Thanks to Brian Windhorst on that. So, Zach, Windy mentions the escrow, where a percentage of the player's paycheck is withheld until the final revenue is counted at the end of the season. Do you feel that it is ultimately this is where that uncertain revenue will be taken from?
I mean, if you're really committed to the 50-50 split, I don't really see how else to do it. I mean, you could argue that maybe the owner should give back a little bit more because they're on balance much wealthier than the players are. But that doesn't appear to be in the cards. They appear to be sticking to the 50-50 split, as Windy mentioned, keeping the system the way it works. And there's this assumption that, well, we just need to ride out this year, 21-22, that's going to be our return to normal. That's why they want to get the calendar back to as close to normal as possible for that season. I mean, who knows? Why are we assuming that? And you know, the long-term financial future is really, you know, uncertain. But, you know, the NBA on the scale of things that actually really matter is not very high on that scale. But, yeah, I mean, this is a huge business that its model is for sure in jeopardy.
Perk, as a player, how concerning is this?
It's very concerning. And it goes to show you that we didn't make sure we did our job in the last CBA agreement and how the NBA won that deal. But I was just more impressed about how peaceful Windy was talking about billions of dollars at stake. Like, he was just so peaceful in that segment. It was crazy to me. But no, but in all seriousness, this is what I was talking about earlier in the show, why it's so important that some of these guys get back to work. I know a lot of people be talking about, oh, these players make millions of dollars. They shouldn't be worried. They should be financially straight. But that's not it. When you throw in taxes, when you throw in escrow, a lot of these guys that are on the lower tier, they depend on their NBA salary. And listening to Windy speak just now, it raised concerns for me for the player standpoint.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting because, look, some people, if you own a home, right, like you put certain money in escrow to pay for your property taxes. And, you know, those things are also tabulated from year to year, kind of like the salary cap. And sometimes it's enough money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get a little refund. You know, you get something back because you gave too much into the escrow. All of this is still a huge unknown, Zach, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're going to have to see what the revenue looks like, not just this year, but next year. And to your point, this formula has been in existence before. Sometimes the players get a refund, sometimes they don't. But, you know, again, this is what they're negotiating probably right now. And the union has to negotiate not only with the league, but within its own membership, because depending on how they structure this, whether they take a huge hit this year or spread the hit out over multiple years, it affects different classes of players, different experience levels, different ages differently. And that's a very complex negotiation in and of itself.
Speaking of complex negotiations, the draft could turn into that as we move on here. One of the most intriguing lottery talents in the NBA draft this year is Memphis center James Wiseman. The Timberwolves won the number one pick in this year's draft, and 16 days from now, they'll have to make a decision. Well, our Brian Windhorst told the Scoop podcast that he believes Wiseman has zero interest in joining the Wolves, where All-Star center Karl-Anthony Towns currently resides. Perk, what is your reaction to hearing Wiseman doesn't want to play for the T-Wolves?
He shouldn't. Look, Wiseman is the best big in this year's draft. This kid got superstar written all over him. Minnesota drafting Wiseman is like me going to get a guard dog and telling them not to bark. It just can't happen. Wherever this kid goes, he needs to be let off the leash and need to be let free and go out there and do what he does best. And he wouldn't be able to do that playing under all-star center like Carl Anthony Towns. I think they will bump heads because they're similar players. So he does need to go to a team where it's his team and he's the starting center. He's the big that's getting the touches. He's the go-through guy. So I'm with him. I like what him and his camp is doing. They're making the best decision and calling the right shot for this kid, Wiseman.
I don't mind Wiseman expressing that opinion or making it known because, you know, sports is one of the only industries where you don't get to pick where you work. Your employer picks you out of you know, no choice of your own. That said, I don't think Minnesota really cares. I mean, the fit issues are obvious. Everybody can see that Towns and Wiseman played essentially the same position. We all know that. But Minnesota is still sitting. I think they'll explore and have already explored trading that pick for veterans, trading down, seeing what they can get. And it doesn't really matter if Wiseman doesn't want to go to them. If another team below Minnesota really, really, really wants Wiseman and Minnesota has the power to take him ahead of that team, they still have the same amount of leverage. So I don't really think it will affect their thought process on the draft.
Zach, how do teams near the top of the draft feel overall about the top prospects, the Wisemans, the LaMelo Balls, the Anthony Edwards, et cetera?
Well, you just hear the same thing over and over again, which is this is just one of those years where there's not a guy, there's not a surefire number one superstar, eight-time all-star, whatever you think it, whatever you conceive of it as. And that's fine. That's one of those years. But I have had several people tell me, even if that's true, all three of those guys are top five or top six picks in a normal draft. They're really good players. And so, yeah, I think there will be some jockeying. I think there will be some interest. Some teams covet Ball. Some teams covet Wiseman. I think their teams are excited about these guys, even if there's no Zion or LeBron or AD.
Perk, how do you feel about those young men? I don't know if you've seen any of them. I know Anthony Edwards specifically just had a workout, a pro day on ESPN2. Have you gotten a chance to see any of them? And do you believe any of them are going to be franchise-type players?
Well, I know right now Anthony Edwards is a franchise guy. We're talking about a guy that has the athleticism of Russell Westbrook and a smaller offensive package in James Harden. This guy is an NBA bucket right now. And any team that pass on him as the number one pick, they are tripping. I'm telling you this right now. This kid is ready. He has superstar written all over him. I know I keep saying that, but he does. He has elite talent, great build, great athleticism. He's NBA ready. Somebody better draft this kid number one. I tell you that much.
All right. Well, we may do our own version of a draft here in a second because up next, our friend Shaq, a.k.a. the Big Aristotle, has cherry-picked an all-time starting five that he says can't be beat.
It can't be beat.
But is he right? Stay tuned. Stick around here on The Jump.
Rachel, give this man his flowers. He comes with the Halloween costumes every year. I'm Kendrick Perkins, the hottest name at ESPN. Tristan Thompson needs to come play for LA like old people need soft shoes. Man, listen, you cannot tell me the sky is green and the grass is blue. Load management been happening anyway. So you saw even when Bam out of the Bayou was out there playing, they still had Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee on the bench. Tristan Thompson is a big who can guard away from the basket as well as in the paint. You can't bake the cake faster than you bake the take.
All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. You just saw it, a mean dressed up as you, Perk, for Halloween. Now, I thought he nailed the analogies, but the cadence and the impersonation was a little off. What did you make of Amin's impression?
You know what? I gave him a 7 on Halloween, the day before Halloween, but I'm going to go back and give him a 10 because the Bam out of the Bayou took the cake. And then when he came out and said, you can't bake the cake without the cake, whatever that ball was, it was classic. It made no sense at all. Some of the things I may say on here from time to time. So I'm going to give Amin a 10.
Okay. Fair enough.
The, The cadence doesn't need to be exactly right for this to be a home run. It's all the analogies. The key is the analogies have to make you think for like a couple of seconds. Okay, now I got it. Now I got it.
He did. And of course, he had the t-shirt and the chain on, okay? He made sure to get that in there as well. So, all right, let's move it on. Let's move on here. During a dominant performance in yesterday's Seattle Seahawks victory over the 49ers, LeBron James called Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf, quote, baby Bron. Zach, is that a good nickname for DK Metcalf?
Look, I'm just glad that this guy plays a different sport because there are still people who are scarred by being christened baby Jordan, basketball player. So I'm just glad that LeBron, if he has to bestow this baby Bron nickname, which I don't know if you're allowed to bestow baby you on other people, but if you're doing it, at least he's doing it in another sport where now this guy is not haunted by being baby Bron for the rest of his career.
All right, let's move on. By the way, he did use third person there. I like the way he seamlessly weaved that in. All right, in yesterday's game between the Saints and the Bears, Bears wide receiver Javon Wims was ejected for taking swings at Saints DB C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Although Gardner-Johnson didn't seem too interested in fighting, Wims told Bears officials that Gardner-Johnson spit on him, which Gardner-Johnson denies. Mm. Gardner-Johnson was also punched by teammate Michael Thomas earlier this month. Wims was suspended 2 games without pay for the incident. Perk, was the juice worth the squeeze on this fight for Wims?
Absolutely, especially if a guy spit on him. Look, he went over there and he addressed him like the numbers on the house, and he put the paws on him. He put the paws on him, George. If he spit on that man, he deserved it. He got exactly what he was looking for.
Zach, I just feel like
I just don't think
punching a helmet makes no sense to me.
Just don't punch somebody wearing a helmet. That's all I'm saying. Like, of course the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. I mean, I like how he kind of snuck up on him and like tapped him on the shoulder and then hit him. That was kind of cool. But like, it's just not going to work out for you if you punch in a helmet.
Yeah, he probably thought he was leaning in for like a quick conversation about something and then pow, right in the face. All right, let's shift gears to some of the all-time greats. Our pal Shaq posted to Instagram an all-time starting five that features Allen Iverson, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and of course, himself, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq captioned this with the post, quote, I don't care what none of y'all are saying. Ain't nobody beating this team in a 7-game series. So here at The Jump, we put together a potential starting five that we feel could compete. It consists of Magic Johnson, Steph Curry, KD, Tim Duncan, and Hakeem Olajuwon, and maybe you could flip and put in Kareem, to be honest, in there as well. So, Perk, you taking Shaq starting five or the field?
I'm taking Shaq starting five, not only in a 7-game series, but to sweep the playoffs. Listen, you have four of the top four players in that starting five that are top 10 players all time. Shaquille O'Neal, the most dominant. Kobe Bryant, the most skilled in my eyes. And then you had a GOAT conversation between LeBron James and Michael Jordan. All those guys on one team, they sweeping through the playoffs. Forget just winning the 7-game series.
Four, 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 four.
I have to give Shaq credit. He created a super team centered around the two greatest players of all time. And then tweeted like, no one's going to doubt us. I don't care who's doubting us. This team's going to roll to victory. I don't care what anyone's like, Shaq, you picked the two greatest players of all time. Your team's awesome. I don't think anyone's going to fight with you about this one.
Does anyone, do you give our team any chance, Zach? There's better passing on
our
team.
Yeah, of course. You got more shooting. Like, of course, that team, if they played 25 times or whatever, that team's going to knock some W's. I mean, the talent is unquestionable. Like you said, you could throw Kareem, Wilt, Larry Bird didn't make it, Oscar, Jerry West. We got a ton of great players to choose from. But yeah, I mean, if you got Michael and LeBron, it's going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, for sure. Perk, are you worried about the passing on Shaq's team at all or the shooting? No, not worried about it at all?
No, because I got too many scores. I got Jordan that could go give me 30.
Okay.
I got AI that could give me 30. I got Kobe Bryant that could go give me 30. LeBron. Okay. I got too much going on to worry about shooting, George.
Okay, fair enough. All right. We are done here then. You know what, Shaq? Maybe I'm going to go on the Instagram right now and try to create a team. Hit me up on Instagram or on Twitter. I'm going to try to compete with Shaq's team. And I'm going to tag Perk and Zach Lowe on this stuff, too. We're going to try to find a team that works
there.
Go
do it.
All right. Thanks for watching, everybody, here on The Jump. We are off for the next couple of days, but we will be back on Thursday on ESPN. So in the meantime, make sure you go out and vote. Thanks to Zach. Thanks to Kendrick Perkins. Thanks to the crew. Talk to you Thursday.